The first quarter of 2023 has brought watchers of the economy and markets both new information and a continuation of previous themes. Today, we discuss the most recent updates to inflation, employment numbers, and interest rate forecasts, as well as new uncertainties about the banking sector, as well as shifts in market leadership. With so many mixed signals, what might we expect in the short to medium term for the economy and markets? And what might this imply for your portfolio allocation? Stay tuned as we discuss all this and more right now on the Retirement Lifestyle Show.
Welcome. You are listening to the Retirement Lifestyle Show with Roshan Lungani, Eric Olson, and Adrian Nicholson. This show is an exploration of ideas to help you work toward your ideal retirement. Get ready for the financial independence of your dreams.
Welcome to the Retirement Lifestyle Show. I'm your co-host, Roshan Lungani. We've got the team together with Adrian Nicholson and Eric Olson. Great episode ready for you today. Adrian, how's your week been?
My week's been really good. Had a nice weekend. Went up to Boston and saw a Celtics game. So that was a lot of fun, breaking up the routine a little bit. So it was a good time and I'm looking forward to today's episode. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, likewise. Good topic today as well. I just want to say to our listeners, you know, from time to time, we're not just running a podcast. The three of us, each of us, serve clients. And so we get a lot of questions from clients about what's going on in the markets, what's going on in the economy. So we just had this conversation. We thought, what if this quarter, I don't know that we do it every quarter, but certainly with a lot of the things that have changed since we did our most recent economic outlook and our market outlook to start the calendar year, we thought, what if we just give a little booster shot right now and help you with some understanding, at least impart to you whatever our understanding is of what's taking place in the economy and the markets and what our outlook is for the coming quarter or longer. There certainly are some revisions to our outlook. And so for our clients who are listening, hopefully you'll find this to be stimulating to your thinking as well. If you're not a client, we hope you'll find this useful as well. So gentlemen, we're talking about both the economy and the markets. Let's start with the economy. What do you think are some of the signposts that people should be paying attention to if they're not already? Many of these are, I'm sure, ones that we've been talking about for a while and are fully recognized. But today was a big day because the Bureau of Labor Statistics came out with its monthly update on one of those data series that people are watching so closely. Talk to me about what it is that you're watching in the economy right now.
Well, with the economy, I think everything is driven by inflation, employment, and Fed policy. Those three things, I think, go together, go hand in hand with everything going on in the economic world, U.S. economy, even looking at it globally. So I think inflation is what's driving the car, and then you've got Fed policy responding to that, or I should say inflation driving the car, employment numbers in the passenger seat and the Fed in the back seat making decisions based on that data.
Mm-hmm. So big news from the Bureau of Labor Statistics today, and we should share with our listeners the numbers that just came out. So Adrian, do you want to run through those for us?
Well, just the overall summary is that inflation came in a lot cooler than expected today, and that's always just a really good sign. I mean, this really is a market that's being driven by news and headlines. So getting a report saying inflation's cooler is just really good for the markets because, again, that really is a driving force on what the Fed is going to do with rates. I believe their next meeting is sometime in May. So getting a cool report today is a really good sign to what's to come. So that's just a really good thing that came out today that investors are really excited about.
Yeah. So we have talked in the past about various measures of inflation. And one of those, of course, probably the most widely recognized is the consumer price index. Today's number came in with both the headline number, which does include food and energy. And that number was up year on year, 5%. So remember, not long ago, we were talking about, you know, inflation running out on a year on year basis in the eights. And so gradually we've seen that diminish. And with that to be down to a 5, we're a whole lot closer to what the Fed has indicated is its long-term target rate of 2. But I should also mention that the core inflation rate, which excludes food and energy, was at 5.6 year-on-year rates. And the month of February versus just the month of March, in the first case, that is to say the headline number, which does include food and energy, that was up 0.1% from February because energy was down so much. But if you then exclude food and energy, then the number was up 0.4. If you said, well, if what each and every month things moved up at 0.4%, that would be about 4.8%. Or I'm just doing the math, 12, you know, essentially 12 times 0.4. So it's that number is more encouraging than hearing it being at 0.5. So gradually it seems as though there's some bite in the various actions that the Federal Reserve is taking. I think one of the most noteworthy actions that the Fed has taken, since you indicated, Roshan, that's certainly the Fed watches and then it takes action to try to cool the inflation and bring the economy into a point at which it can, you know, reach equilibrium again for the long term. But that is money supply. So we've talked about money supply. That's cash on hand for the most part in checking and savings accounts and in your under your mattress and what have you. That has been diminishing. We're about not quite halfway back to where we were pre-COVID from the peak that we reached when that number just was sent skyrocketing by all the infusion of cash from both the Fed and the fiscal stimulus. So the Fed has really been allowing that money supply to contract. And with that I believe much more than interest rate policy is what's leading to some of the decline in inflation that we're seeing. If the concept is more too much money chasing too few goods and services, if you'd start taking money out so there can't be as much that's chasing, that helps that number come back down.
Well, I mean, Eric, higher interest rates would help lead to lower money supply, though. It's not like they're not related to one another.
You know, I think I believed that very strongly, you know, for a long time, that interest rates were more influential than money supply. I really today, Roshan, believe that it's the opposite.
That's not what I had said. I'm not saying one's more important than the other. I just said that the way you described it, it's as if one doesn't impact the other. So increasing rates does lower money supply.
Well, certainly increasing rates will lower borrowing. And then to the extent that there's borrowing, particularly for big ticket items like homes and cars and such, then in that sense, I suppose there's, you know, less money that's being deployed in some ways. But I guess explain to me what you see as the connection between those two. How does higher interest rate lower money supply?
Well, exactly as you described, right? If you can't borrow as much, there's less money out there. I think it's literally that basic, right? Where if your rates are higher, so people aren't borrowing as much money, they have less money on hand. Or said differently, they're then spending the money they have versus borrowing money because the rates aren't as attractive. So you are going to get to lower money supply. I'm not arguing that money supply isn't more important. I've read and seen a lot that makes me believe that. So I'm just saying that if you say they're unrelated, I don't think it's fair to say that's unrelated, interest rate going up and money supply coming down. I think there is a correlation.
Okay, I can see that. I think the effect that you just described, which is that let's say that you're planning on making a purchase. Maybe a house is a little different story, but we could even use a house. You're given the choice between, hey, I'm going to put down 20% and borrow 80. If I'm looking at rates where they are right now and I have the cash to do it, I might say, well, I'll just put down 30 instead or 40 or something like that in order to borrow less or at least in order to avoid those higher interest rates. So I could see that. I could see how that could take some more. Sure.
You might have to, right? For a lower payment as well, right? You could afford a mortgage of X dollars per month. The rates have gone from 3 to, you know, back up to near 7, right? So rates have doubled. The payment you could afford hasn't changed, assuming your income hasn't changed. So now you have to put more money down, thus lower money supply.
You know, so I guess what I would want to do here, not to turn this into a long discussion, because I think there's many other things that we want to say, but if I look back on the money M2 money supply chart issued by the Federal Reserve, and I think it goes back to about 1960. I think what your question is raising for me is a desire after the show to get out a spreadsheet and look at the periods of rising interest rates and falling interest rates and see to what extent that was correlated with increases or decreases in the M2 money supply. There's also been a redefinition of some elements of money supply, but that's a different topic. Anyway,
one way is... I'm always putting these questions into Google when we've got them, and I've got another point I did not make that I have to give credit to Barron's, but they have another great point. Higher rates means consumer pay more in interest. That higher interest will also deplete cash.
Ah, okay. That's a good point.
Another way. So, yeah. And I know that our topic is not money supply today. The way you described it was if the Fed's doing this, but money supply is doing its own thing. And I just wanted to, that may not be what you meant. That's how it sounded. I just wanted to make the point that I do think they are related, but let's continue on with our topic. So we started talking about the economy and the outlook. And Adrian, go ahead if you have something to add on inflation, the Fed.
Well, just really interesting how all this really just ties together. And just moving past the individual, how interest rates impact them too, you're just also seeing it with like specific companies as well. Whether it's a small, medium, large size companies, they all respond very differently, especially their business with rates increasing as well. And it's just really interesting just to watch. Some people are definitely familiar with going on with banks right now, regional banks, especially with the Silicon Valley banking collapse. That was just extremely important just to see how interest rates really do have an impact, not only on individuals, but specific companies as well. And that's something that's going to be more important than ever, that people are going to be monitoring this quarter as well, because just higher interest rates, companies really do need to look at how they're going to operate and just move forward when less cash is available for them to borrow and to invest in their company. So it's just really important. And that's why we talked about inflation first, because like you said, that's just a really driving force on what the Fed's going to do. Is a pivot going to really, is that really going to help? Is that really going to benefit all these companies out here? We don't know. But seeing how they're all tied together is just really important, especially when it comes to what you're owning and what you're investing in, because a change in rates can really impact that. And that's what you saw with the banking collapse.
Can you go a little bit further into that regarding the banking collapse and the interest rates? I just want to know what part you're referring to right now.
Just overall how this interest rate topic is just really shaking up certain companies and the markets in general, because that's one of the biggest things that impacted Silicon Valley Bank, is since they had all these loans that were impacted with the rise in rates. And that's just one company. And it's just going to be experienced differently. And it's also impacting the labor market as well, where companies right now are just cutting back and the job market might be getting a little bit tighter too. I'm just trying to point out how all these things are really just connected in a way. And that's what investors really just need to be monitoring, where you shouldn't really just get all focused on maybe one or two indicators. Just seeing how they all correlate and impact each other is really important, especially when you're looking at the assets you own or your overall portfolio.
Yeah, I think what you just described of how the things are connected, you know, that the rates, you know, the banking situation and unemployment, everything, I think what we're seeing are a lot of mixed signals out there, which is why as we were preparing for the episode, I was saying, I think you can find whatever outlook you want right now, because it's really tough to find a consensus, you know, from a market perspective, you know, bullish or bearish. One other economic indicator, though, or one other economic outlook that people are mixed on that I think is important is recession risk. So, Adrian, you had mentioned the Fed pivot. I believe that's if the Fed will switch from tightening to loosening interest rate policy. And so what some places, some bullish cases are seeing is, yeah, we're going to have a recession. I think what I am seeing consensus on is the people that say yes, say it'll be mild. The people that say no, say we don't think there's going to be a recession, but if there is, it'll be mild. So we think we can look past it. But I think a lot of them are the bull cases on the market is saying, well, if there will be a recession, the Fed will pivot and then the markets will bounce back. My first question to both of you, are you seeing the same mixed signals or mixed outlooks out there as well?
Yeah, I would say so. So just taking employment for a second. So I think you see some really great numbers on the employment, which some of which I wrote down just to be make sure that I came prepared for this. We saw unemployment tick down in the most recent unemployment report from 3.6 to 3.5. That would seem great. We saw non-farm payrolls.
Just on that tick down that you had talked about, you see that tick down and then what does the market do? The market then declines because a tick down took the expectation prior to that was that the Fed's probably pausing their rate hikes. After that strong inflation, they had said, well, now the expectation is a quarter point rate hike in May, right? So which it goes back to our point at the beginning that it's really interest rate and Fed policy. And as I mentioned, the inflation being in the driver's seat and then in the passenger seat being unemployment. But Eric, please continue with some of the data.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree with your point that the Federal Reserve, the market watchers are watching good news and thinking, oh no, this means that the Federal Reserve is going to be more punitive. And so the market responds adversely to good news, which is just 100% backwards, you'd think. You know, you'd want to see companies doing well and business doing well. Non-farm payrolls were up 236,000. Civilian employment, which is also another alternative measure here, was up 577,000 in the most recent report. That's about twice the monthly average that we've seen over the last year. Labor force participation, which is another really big driver of economic health, was up 480,000 numbers. And the labor force participation rate, which I think is even more important, we talk a lot about and watch unemployment, but labor force participation rate was up to 62.6%, gradually making that recovery. Here's maybe where all of those numbers, you have to ask, is it real? The aggregate number of hours worked dropped by 0.1%. What does that imply? That implies that maybe there's less to do. So companies are hiring perhaps in anticipation of economic expansion, but perhaps they'll find themselves surprised and they'll see it actually go the other direction. What you are seeing is also a great unevenness in where the employment is occurring. So hospitality, retail, services, essentially, are the places where you're seeing the really dramatic growth, whereas in goods, you're seeing less of that. So we'll see where that all leads.
I mean, it does make sense because back in 2020, it was a very goods-specific economy or market. People really prioritizing goods rather than services because you couldn't really go anywhere. And now you're seeing that kind of change. And that's just really what I'm really seeing now for like the next year or so, how there's just going to be a lot of change in the landscape, a lot of push and pull right now until things smooth or even out.
Well, isn't the services employment to 2 points. One, isn't that just trying to get us back to normal? Like, I don't know if you've been to a restaurant even recently, they still all seem short-staffed, right? So is that just getting back to normal is one question. The second thing is, Eric, can you repeat that number you had regarding the hours worked, or what was that data point you had?
So aggregate hours worked on a month-on-month basis declined by 0.1%. So you think, well, man, if people are hiring up, it's because there's more to be done, and you'd like to see the aggregate hours worked rise along with all of the hiring that's happening. But if you're hiring, but the total number of hours being worked isn't in the same spot, what does that imply? Maybe it implies that they just realized we've been overtaxing our people for too long, And we've been asking them to work these crazy hours, and now we've hired up so that they can go back to having a little bit more work-life balance. Maybe it means that, but it also might mean that there's just less to be done.
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is for another episode, but I hear statistics like that, or these let's work from home all the time, or let's work 4 days a week. And that scares me that we're turning into Europe. That's going to be a society where people aren't as aggressive as working. And maybe you could argue we're overworked. At the same time, are we going to the other extreme? That's a discussion for either another episode or offline, but those kind of numbers just scare me for the long-term outlook of the country as a whole.
You're definitely a Warren Buffett fan, because he was on the news today talking about how people were working on Saturdays when I was a lot younger now, and he doesn't want to go back to the four-day work week.
Yeah, and you know, Buffett's story about how he bought Geico, he took, if I remember the details correctly, he took a train to D.C. from New York on a Saturday and knocked on the doors of the building, and the CEO opened the door. And that's how he learned about a little bit more about Geico being one of his best and investments. And his Benjamin Graham, actually, in I believe it's the footnote of the last edition of The Intelligent Investor at the very end, said that's one of his best investments ever was Geico. So yeah, you have people working harder. But bring us back on topic, since I derailed us and took us off topic. But let's go. Thoughts, gentlemen, recession. What are you seeing, hearing, and thinking about that? I'll first start with what I'm seeing most frequently, that if there is a recession, it will be mild. So, and some are using that as a bull case, that it'll be mild, you can ignore it and move on. Others are saying, well, it will cause us to, you know, slow down, it'll cause the markets to pull back, but it'll be mild. So, you know, you do need to think about it, especially if you're putting money to work right now. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing as well. Well, I think it's also really supported by also what Eric was going through. The labor market as a whole has been a pretty strong area. I think that's just really important to note as well, where that was pretty much the goal and why there was a lot of money being pushed into the economy and market, is just to support the labor market, get people back into work, help support all these businesses. But now you're also seeing a little bit of a contraction, where some of these companies that expanded too much have to pull back and cut back and be a little bit more efficient as well, where I think the labor market as well has been creating this more of a mild and soft landing, and inflation cooling down as well could lead to that as well. It's just something I've been seeing.
I think if you watch what's taking place in money supply, it's hard to anticipate an outcome that doesn't have recession of some kind, late 2023, early 2024. When I say of some kind, I don't know that we're talking about the classic kinds of recessions that, you know, many of us remember, at least those of us are, you know, in my age group, where you can remember what the recession of 74, 75 felt like. You can remember what the recession of 80, 81, 82 felt like, and the recession of the internet following the internet bubble bursting and such, as well as the 2008 global financial crisis. Will we see large numbers of people unemployed? Will we see, you know, all sorts of closures of businesses and such? That seems a little bit hard for me to reconcile with the numbers that we're seeing on other levels. But I don't think you can keep bringing money supply down as quickly as it's been coming down and not have some kind of recession. That might be rolling through different sectors at different paces, but I'm expecting that there will be recession. And by the way, that's a difference from my former view, where I said I was much more of a fence sitter. I just, as I watched the money supply contract, which I think is necessary, unfortunately, but as I watched that happen, now I've moved off the fence and I'm in the camp. We will see a recession.
So I'm in the same camp, but similar to what I said earlier about you're able to find whatever information you're looking for, I can find really strong arguments on both sides of things. You know, as far as, you know, yes, there'll be a recession, no, there won't. I do tend to agree with what you said and what I'm seeing as a consensus on the recession, which is that if it happens, it should be short and shallow, should be a mild recession. Now, if that's the case, if we agree that a recession's mild, let's say you're someone with cash on the sidelines and you're debating to invest it or not, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't right now. Is that recession data point an important consideration or not? Right? Because it's mild, can you say, you know what, I'm not as concerned about that? I'm more concerned about the other inputs? Or is this something that you're thinking, well, even if it is short and mild, it could still have a devastating impact to a portfolio?
Well, let me just highlight or hasten to add before I respond to that question that we want to make sure that none of our listeners are interpreting what we're saying here as advice for you. This is your circumstance could differ a lot, and there is not a single answer. I would say, for example, for somebody who has a very, very long investment horizon, and especially if they're not in a decumulation stage, they're in an accumulation stage, they should be eagerly adding more money into on a dollar cost averaging basis into the markets, because if prices go down, and in fact, if for the next 10 or 20 years prices were suppressed, that would just be one of the best possible things for the Adrians of this world, because they would be able to buy all sorts of, you know, companies at really discounted prices. And then later, with their bags full of stock certificates now, unbelievable levels, then later when the markets eventually do see another rise, they'll have that much more in their sack. But I'd certainly acknowledge then, if someone is living in a decumulation mode from their portfolio, they have to be more sensitive to what the impacts might be. And now with bond interest rates and CD interest rates and even money market interest rates in the fours and, you know, in some cases even into the fives, it's a little bit hard, I think. Remember with the concept that we used to say, there is no alternative, T-I-N-A or TINA. Now there actually is an alternative. And so when you ask the question, should you be in the markets? I would say, well, which market are we talking about? If we're talking about the bond market, you probably should start getting back into the bond market on some basis. And we'll also, I can also, when we get to the market section, I'll say more about the some of the observations I've made about what has been working lately, and we can maybe have a conversation about why it is that's happening. But my own response here is that this is not a time to start yanking money out. Let's put it that way. And I've seen some clients sending me emails. Well, what about this doomsday forecast? And what about this doomsday forecast? And, you know, I just want to say, hey, take a deep breath. We've seen doomsday forecasts every single month for the last 3 years. And we've had a decline. There's no question there's been a decline in 2022, but we haven't seen doom. And so anyway, that's my response to it. How about you, Roshan?
Yeah, well, and the way I was saying, one, I appreciate your disclosure that we're not giving advice. And I should have probably posed my question a little bit clearer,
okay,
or even not added a money thing to it. It's more like, how important is that data point is what I'm getting at. How specifically is recession risk a significant, or would you, if you had to pick one, it's not a concern. It's something that's, you know, in the back of my mind, but I'm not too worried about it, or, you know, not a concern at all. Don't even think about it.
Yeah.
In the back of my mind, not that worried, or it's a top concern when I'm looking at the economy right now. Where would you put recession risk?
In my own case, in terms of my counsel to clients, I would say it's not such a looming concern that you should make substantial modifications to the composition of your portfolio. But having said that, if I observe what the algorithmic approaches that I use for allocating capital are showing, there's enough disagreement between them that I can make an argument either way. So for example, on the small cap value momentum, even though small cap value lately has been suffering, no question about that, relative to the hot streak that it had been running in 2022, comparatively, I should say, at least to the broad markets, I still see that there are companies that are available there where it is not pushing into cash as it has its rules allow it to do. If I look at the large cap high dividend strategy, it's not pushing, it's not freaking out. In fact, it's actually had a pretty good month and off to a reasonable start for the year. But at the same time, I've talked about this high yield spread strategy, which looks at what's taking place in the fixed income market. And that one, about 3 weeks ago, said, time to take some money off the table. So for whatever capital that we have allocated to that, we scaled back from what was in that model, an 80% allocation to equities to only a 20% allocation to equities. So, you know, it's conflicting signals depending on what input you use into that decision. But I, on balance, what I draw from that is, oh, and there's one more algorithmic strategy, which is a momentum one, and that's pretty much all on Europe right now. So it's like all sorts of different directions that things are rotating, but with nothing, with the possible exception of the high yield spread strategy, it is saying, hey, get super cautious now.
Yeah, that says those strategies are all shaking off that concern, at least for now. They are fairly sensitive, though. They can adjust pretty quickly, correct?
Mm-hmm, they can.
Adrian, any thoughts on recession risk? Is it a major concern, mild concern, or not a concern at all?
I mean, I would say it's definitely something to think about, and it is a concern, but when you're somebody like Eric, where you have multiple strategies, a lot of data and algorithms, it definitely helps you sleep at night and does add what I said, that level of diversification that can really help you in so many different types of market environments is just extremely important. If you want to boil it down to the one investment, though specific to a company, what we touched on earlier, you could see it in certain pockets, how this recession can impact certain sectors. I think that's just extremely important to see, especially if you just take a look at last quarter, for instance. One of the best sectors was technology. A sector that got hurt pretty bad was real estate as well, which was impacted due to financial conditions, office space environment. That was a big drag on that sector as well. So you can see the recessions. The reason why I say it's a concern is because it can impact certain parts of your portfolio, and some parts of your portfolio may thrive. And that's where Eric brings up the good principle of having just multiple strategies, multiple things to look at to really smooth out the ride of recession. I think that's just the big important thing that people just really need to understand about and really look at, because if they don't have those built-in strategies, they're not diversified that well. And hearing the word recession can really just be a mix of really some bad times for people. So that's just something to think about.
All right, excellent. Now, gentlemen, anything else to add on the economy and before we shift over to the markets?
I'm just going to note one or two other things. So we've talked about jobs, we've talked about inflation, we've talked about interest rates. I think it's also useful to just observe that profit forecasts are really quite strong. So that's another one of those pieces of the puzzle, which is sort of confounding the overall argument of recession and market decline. You're seeing very strong earnings forecasts. Now, whether those earnings forecasts will be realized is a separate question, but for now, they're very, very strong.
Actually, that's a very good transition. I've got some information to share with you to get your thoughts, some data. Give me one moment to pull this up and share. So S&P 500 corporate earnings dropped by 8% quarter over quarter, nearly 30% year over year. With the prices, the P and the PE rising and earnings falling, that's pushed us up to about 24 times gap earnings, which is 50% above historical averages. Thoughts on that would generally be a fundamental for a bearish outlook, a recession, an argument for a recession. So yes, Eric, your profit forecasts, yeah, they are looking pretty strong. But are they looking pretty strong compared to lower baselines based on what happened? And I've read and seen a lot of concern over this earnings season we're entering right now, saying that could be the factor that drives the markets down.
Which element of the earnings story?
Well, I mean, earnings declining, period, right? We talked about the market. The markets are up. The S&P's up this year, but earnings are down, causing a higher PE, right?
Oh, that's, yeah. So earnings are down for 2022, yes. But in terms, what I was saying was about forecasts. So if to the extent that the markets are instead more focused on future earnings as opposed to trailing earnings. I think that's good news, but there's no doubt that some of the earnings declines that we've seen has that's not great news. The 2022 numbers.
Yeah, that agreed. I think it does. If you're looking at this from an investment perspective and looking at the markets and the downside risk, I think that's the current valuation levels are an argument for at the very least a pullback, as opposed to not necessarily talking about a major drop, but at the very least a pullback. That's an argument for it. And it wouldn't be the first time we've been at high PE multiples for a while. So that could be nothing, right? It could be meaningless. It's just, I just found that interesting and thought it'd be worth discussing.
Well, so one other thing then that companies are facing is, number one, they've been affected at the producer level, just like consumers have been affected by higher prices. So if you have higher input costs, that squeezes margins. And in addition to whatever extent that people are involved in international markets or not, the fact that the U.S. dollar has been declining relative to other currencies more recently, had been on this incredible run, and then starting about four months ago or so, it pivoted, and now it's been in a successive sort of progression downward relative to other major international currencies. That can have an impact on those companies as well. So at this point, I would say the thing that catches most of my attention is not so much what's taking place on earnings in the rearview mirror, but what might lie ahead. And I'm looking at the analysts' consensus estimates of 24, 25, and 26 earnings are really strong. So if they're right, which I don't know that they will be, but if they're right, that should bode well for the markets.
That's an argument for a bull case there. Not necessarily saying that's what your expectation is, just that data point is an argument for the bull case. What other thoughts or indicators are you guys seeing, or should I just share some additional information that I've got?
Are we talking about markets or economy now?
Markets.
Okay, markets. Well, I can say a couple of things that I've just been observing. I mentioned that one of the algorithmic strategies that I have is rotated over to Europe. If I look over the last 6 months, the strongest rising, just on a trend line, linear regression trend line, for those of our listeners that remember back to their college stats classes, how that works, the least squares regression trend line, the strongest single riser as of the close of business yesterday over the last 6 months is Spain, then Italy, then Germany, then France. So of 100 different markets that I track, those are currencies, commodities, large, small, growth value, you name it, sectors, whatever, the strongest performers overall in that phase have been those three European country markets. That's at least when they're translated into U.S. dollars, because the U.S. dollar decline means that European markets that are not hedged back to U.S. dollars in periods where the dollar is weakening, in relative terms, they perform quite well. So I'm curious, to see if that market leadership will continue, especially if the dollar continues its decline. But that's an interesting observation. Another interesting observation, which Adrian made, which is even more recently, that technology has now pivoted after getting a brutal 2022, where it was down, the tech sector was down, or at least the NASDAQ 100 is down 30% and change. Now it's to start the year, it's off to a pretty good start comparatively to other sectors.
That's a very interesting one, technology, because it was technically up 20% from its low a few days ago. It's dropped a little bit below that. So tech was in a bull market. In the shorter term basis, just over the last week or so, it could be just a slowdown, who knows, but it has pulled back. So that's, tech is a very interesting case right now, just because, yes, it has gone down so much. It then really rallied pretty quickly and is possibly showing early signs of weakness. From a overall valuation perspective, from a sector valuation perspective, tech appears right now to be more in the most fairly valued of the sectors that are out there right now. This is based on Morningstar's price to fair value metric. That's what they think the fair value is. So tech has gone from being viewed as undervalued based on their price to fair value metric to now being pretty close to fairly valued compared to other sectors. Yeah, they're seeing the sectors that they're looking at from a valuation perspective that look undervalued. The biggest is communication services, although that's had a pretty good rally this year as well so far.
Oh, so they're saying, just looking at purely on valuations, they like that.
Correct. Purely on valuation. Purely on valuations, that's what they see the most overvalued sector.
Well, that undervalued telecom.
Excuse me. The most undervalued sector in communication services. Technology is still slightly undervalued from their perspective, but it's amongst the highest. Technology and healthcare are the highest. So a number of a one is fairly valued for them. Technology and healthcare are at 0.95. Actually, I will share this for those of you watching on YouTube and for Eric and Adrian as well.
I think energy too has been pretty interesting just to observe as well, because last year I had a really strong year. First quarter wasn't doing well at all, really big pullback. And since then, it's actually had a nice recovery as well. So that's also something that has been interesting to follow.
Yeah, yeah, it has energy. And if you look at this, so gentlemen, you can see this screen, correct?
I can. If you can dial it up a little bit, that would help.
So for those on YouTube, we'll include this in the show notes, this article. This is a Morningstar second quarter outlook, which overall they tend to be fairly bullish, but this is their price to fair value metric. And they're saying, you know, tech at 0.95. Once again, 1.0 means it's fairly valued. Above one is overvalued. So 0.95 is pretty close to the, it's still technically undervalued, but it's pretty close up. But then if you compare that to some of the other areas, I think something really interesting, though, is financial services, just because of what's been going on with the banking crisis, which I think we will discuss further. While I am sharing my screen and showing some of these numbers, I'll show you something else that is pretty interesting here. Small cap has not, small cap value in particular, has not kept in line with the markets, the S&P or the NASDAQ for this year. And if you look at that's where they're seeing from, once again, this same fair value metric, small cap appears to be the undervalued space for them, you know, small value.
Do you think that's been really driven by just interest rates now, just thinking about how just interest rates are higher right now? These small cap companies that just don't have a lot of cash on hands like the big guys do are less likely to take risk or borrow more money, where there might be more opportunity if rates were to pull back. But right now, with rates as high as they are right now, is just something that just isn't favorable for smaller companies.
That could be part of it. They held up the best last year, right? So maybe it's just the fact that they did so well last year, the small caps, compared to large and, you know, with NASDAQ more tech oriented, that it could be just they stayed flat while the others went up. I don't, could be interest rate related. I think it's important to point out it's not that they've had a major decline, it's more that they've been close, more flat on the year versus the S&P and the NASDAQ being up.
Yeah. And I guess another factor too, as well, is just with the markets being where they're at right now as well, people were tending to look at like different spaces, looking at seeing where they're over allocated the most and just trying to diversify not only by sector, but by company size as well too. And when you talk about the fear of a recession, how major it's going to be as well, people tend to look towards bigger, more well-established companies rather than smaller, more speculative ones as well. So that's also something people need to really look at as well, depending on how they view what type of recession, if we do have one, what that would be.
Yeah, I think both of those are good points, interest rates and recession risk affecting smaller companies more. That could very well be the reason.
Well, one lesson for all of this, I think, which are we say a lot, but this the last year illustrates this principle very strongly, is if you say a diversified portfolio protects you from a lot of the extremes. If you look at telecom, we were just talking about telecom being a very attractively priced. It's attractively priced now. That is true. But it is also the case that of all those 100 things that I track, aside from natural gas, which has just been brutalized over the last year, and especially over the last 6 months, and oil services also pretty bad, telecom is the hardest hit individual in sector of its kind. Then real estate. So, you know, commodities, especially energy and telecoms and real estate. So does that set things up then for potentially a resurgence in the other direction? We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The other thing that I think you've got to think about is, as we always say, this is to give you thoughts and things to look into and research. But sometimes things are undervalued for a reason, right? The economics aren't good. Things are heading down. The old saying of, you know, don't try to catch a falling knife. And I don't know that telecom's there. I just think that if you're allocating time to research and you're starting fresh with just saying what sector should I look at, maybe that is a place to start just because of the undervalued space. Now, it could be catching a falling knife, so you might want to avoid it, or you could find situations of throwing the baby out with the bathwater and making sure you can find some good deals out there. I do want to touch one other item I want to make sure we talk about, because I think it's important, is the banking risks. It's not necessarily risk from a deposit perspective, but I found an interesting argument which was saying that the banking crisis is not over, even though there were, you know, good response and the market held up well. The argument is that small and mid-sized banks have people pulling deposits, and then they also tend to make up the lion's share of commercial real estate lending. So when you get lower deposits and asset values going down, we have got a long ways to go for this whole banking crisis, specifically for the regionals, the small and mid-sized, we have some more fallout coming, and that could have a major impact on the markets, just causing decline, you know, that across the board. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I am quite concerned about that concentration, as you just pointed out. If you saw money center banks were the recipients of tremendous inflows as people moved money from smaller banks. And I think that's so funny because, I mean, Silicon Valley Bank's issue wasn't that it was small. It was, I think, a top 25 bank. Maybe I think it was even actually top 20 bank in terms of deposits. Now, we did note that its deposits doubled in about 1 year, and that certainly elevated it, but it wasn't necessarily the smallness. I mean, and people forget, whether you're at a money center bank or at a regional bank, if you have the FDIC insurance and you understand how to allocate no more than $250,000 per depositor per bank, then you can protect a lot of cash if you're a household or even a small business, depending on how much there. So I would just say, just a vote for people to rethink that decision to pull all that money in that direction, and instead consider thinking about your community and the bank, the local bank that's there, putting money and keeping money on deposit with smaller regional banks and community banks. I think is, you know, it's a positive for the process of keeping money allocated to smaller businesses.
Yeah, and that will definitely help with the economy. And the majority of people have deposits that are well within the FDIC insurance limits. So if you're if you've got that protection, especially with the way the reaction was with Silicon Valley Bank making all depositors hold, I think you're safe there in terms of having your deposits. So you don't need to run out and pull your money out if you're below that level. Gentlemen, anything to add on market outlooks, opportunities? I know I said that was the last thing. I got one last thing is just the old saying of sell in May and go away. I'm not necessarily advocating you should sell, but another thing I'm just seeing consistently, and I think, Eric, your point you made a few times of you don't need to adjust your portfolio because of it. Maybe what you need to do is adjust your expectations possibly, especially since we've had such a strong quarter. But what I've seen consistently is that long term's looking pretty good. Short term is looking like there'll be volatility. I've seen it say it'll be rocky, it'll be range bound. So I do think that's something that you should at least consider with your portfolio, just with at the very least your expectations. Any thoughts on that with just the timing and seasonality, what's happened this first quarter, because this is an outlook we're trying to give for the rest of the year based on the first quarter.
Yeah, I would say the last thing I would want to do is to leave people with the impression that we're so dismissive of some of the risks that we've talked about and some of the adverse news that we've talked about, that we're saying, go for the gusto and pounding the table for equities in particular. I would just will acknowledge that with bonds now actually paying a real yield, that's probably going to continue the flow from stocks to bonds. So it really depends on when we talk about how are the markets going to do. Again, we have to ask which market. But I believe that there a well-diversified portfolio that's aligned with your long-term risk tolerance, at this point, you don't need to jump ship from that. You can, I think, wait this out, and the long term is, I think, the strength of the U.S. economy is something that serves you well in the long run. I will highlight, since you did talk about the financial element, though, Roshan, one thing, and you did talk about regional banks and then money center banks, that one other thing I'm concerned about is the Federal Reserve itself. For the longest time, the Federal Reserve used a policy of limited reserves, and in the wake of the financial crisis, they moved to a policy called abundant reserves. And with that policy, they had been making it so that the reserves that banks had to keep, that the Federal Reserve was not paying them for that. But then the Federal Reserve did start paying them for that. And now the cost of the payments that the Federal Reserve is paying out to these banks is now less than the money that it's taking in on its own bond portfolio. And so it's running deficits. And so this is a new thing. And what does it mean when the Federal Reserve is running deficits? What does it do to cure that? Does it just print new money? I mean, what does it do? So we're in really strange territory now. And this is, I think, a byproduct of the human tendency toward hubris and saying, we're going to just run in there and we're going to fix everything and then never back away. I think it is the case that the economy will be healthier in the long run. And now I'm not saying tomorrow or this quarter. I'm talking about for the next 10 and 20 years and maybe next generation or two. If indeed we have less intervention by both on the fiscal side and on the monetary side, and allow markets themselves to do the lion's share of the work in keeping the economy humming.
I tend to agree with you fully with that. If we have the markets set the tone, I think that's a good way to go. And I wonder if that's where the Fed is trying to get to, just because, and this might sound strange because of all the rate hikes and so on, but I just mean that we can't have zero interest rates forever. And I wonder if these rate hikes are putting us more on course for that, whereas those zero interest rates, we're putting too much in the power of the governments and interest. And they have a lot of power with the interest rates, which they can continue to adjust, but we have to get back to more normal rates at some point. I don't know that we had to do it in really the majority of it in a 6-month time period, but we do have to get there. And maybe this was just the opportunity to do so. For those of you listening, please like, subscribe, give us 5 stars, reach out to us if you have questions or need help. And you have the power to create your retirement. We're hoping we help you on your journey. Keep making smart decisions, invest in your future. This has been the Retirement Lifestyle Show.
Schedule a conversation with Roshan, Adrian, or Eric today at retirementlifestyleshow.com. Roshan and Eric are certified financial planner practitioners. They, along with Adrian, are investment advisor representatives and serve clients across the U.S. with financial planning and investment advice through RHA Wealth. If you found this show helpful, gained knowledge, or enjoyed the time you spent with us, tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review. This will help others discover the show. To access our show notes, to download any of the tools mentioned in today's podcast, to ask us a question, or to schedule a conversation, go to retirementlifestyleshow.com. All opinions expressed by podcast hosts and guests are solely their own. While based on information they believe is reliable, neither RHA Wealth nor its affiliates warrants its completeness or accuracy, nor do their opinions reflect the opinion of RHA Wealth. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be regarded as specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. The show hosts offer investment advice through RHA Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor, and securities through RHA Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and NFA. Finally, our music is The Chance by Jason Shaw and Audionautics. It's part of the YouTube Audio Library, and it's licensed under a Creative Commons license. I am Ray Voices. Thank you for listening.